Trace is now being recorded.
Myself, Alan Cameron, Laura Avery and Neil Volan, and representatives from Openreach who are Eloise McGuinness and Simon Higgins. I would now like to pass you on to Alan Cameron.
So, welcome everybody. This is a bit of an experiment with giving customers hopefully a bit more information in the way that we do at the ISP forum quarterly at a face-to-face meeting. Well, we thought it was quite a good time to give a bit of an update on FTTP with some of the stuff that we're doing. Given that it is a discussion
has
much
joined
like
the conference.
The ISP forum, it's worth just pointing out the confidentiality and legal statement that we're both Openreach and BT Wholesale are sharing information here that we share with operators. So this is not public domain information. This is information that we're sharing
has joined the conference
about our sort of products and development, which is aimed at operators, and is sort of held under confidentiality. And that should be no surprises to anyone. So Sean's already introduced people on the call. And there's a slide up with the running order. For people who've just joined, we have a WebEx on. If you go to webjoin.com and get the same passcode that you used to join the call, you'll be able to join the WebEx and see the slides. So there's a lot going on in FTP at the moment. And a lot of the, although almost everybody on this call is either in
has joined the conference.
All customers on this call are basically wholesale customers who buy FTTP or are interested in buying FTTP through BT Wholesale. Obviously, a great deal of the engineering work goes on in Openreach. So for this call, we've got, as Sean said, Eloise and Simon from Openreach to describe some of the detail of the things they're doing, most of which will be consumed by wholesale, most of which will become available to wholesale customers. But it's worth bearing in mind that it doesn't automatically flow through, and for some of it, we're looking for comments from customers about which bits they would see as valuable. So running order, once I've finished sort of doing a bit of introduction, we'll hand over to Eloise and Simon, who'll give you some more detail. Then I've got a couple more things to say towards the end, and then we've got some time for questions and answers. We're running this with an open bridge so that everybody can be heard, so you can interject with questions and things. It also means if you get any background noise, it's worth muting your line. But if you don't have a local mute, star 6 will mute your line on the bridge. It should not be necessary. So moving on a bit, I was just saying FTP is going through quite an interesting time at the moment. There are senior people in BT who are very focused on making it successful and driving up the footprint from what is currently about 330,000 premises that could buy FTP in the UK, driving that up to 2 million by 2020. In a number of ways that you'll hear a bit more about, including deploying a new network technique that you might have heard people talk about, scale FTP. So you'll hear more on this call about what that means and how that, I think, will address some of the problems that people have had with FTP. So,
has
also
joined the conference.
We're working closely with Openreach to improve the experience of FTP for our customers. And hopefully by the end of this call, you'll have a better idea of the kind of things we're doing to make that happen. It's worth touching on the fact that for BT Wholesale, FTP is not a separate product. It's a part of our fiber broadband portfolio. It's an end user access variant on the WBC and WBMC products. So if you, any CP who buys those, and there are many, many who do, is able to buy FTP should they want to. There's no separate sign up. I think that should be obvious to pretty much everybody on this call, because I think all CPs on this call are active or are considering being active in FTP. But it's not a separate product for wholesale. FTP is a variant within our existing broadband. And as I've just described, about 350,000 customers can get to FTP. It's a reasonably small minority within 26 million premises in the UK that can reach fibre broadband, but it will be growing over the next few years.
Has joined the conference.
And just to briefly touch on what FTTP is, I think you'll all be aware of this, we won't waste time here, that FTTP comprises fibre all the way to customer prem. That means you get line rate for everything, you don't get sort of DSL and performance, you don't get retrains, and you get sort of rock solid performance when it's there, whereas a lot of us know it can be more difficult to get it installed than some of our other copper and competent and methods of delivering broadband. Available a range of speeds from 42, 4010, recently added 5510, 8020, or if you want to go beyond the speeds that SDC will do, you can have 22020 and 33030. So hopefully no great surprises in any of that. And you can draw a pretty picture of the ONT in customer prem. The ONT is a four-port unit, which gives you the advantage that you can have up to four circuits.
Has joined the conference.
A further advantage that once you've got the ONT installed, you can order a circuit as a succession provide on an existing ONT, which saves a lot of mucking about installing fibres and installing the ONT. And in fact, those kind of orders will be fulfilled overnight. There's a one-day lead time as long as there's no work to do in customer prem. That's a fine advantage. It speaks to something else which is worth being aware of, in that it's not, within the wholesale portfolio, it's not possible to do a seamless migration of a customer from one CP to another. But what you can do with a multi-port ONT is, if moving from one CP to another, you can deploy the new service without disturbing the old one, make a managed handover, and then cease the old service. So the multi-port ONT allows a good customer experience of migration without actually being an engineered migration journey. So moving on from that, I'd like to sort of hand over to Eloise now, who's going to sort of go through some of the sort of OpenReach views on how the product will be developed. I can drive the slides for you, but Eloise, over to you.
All right, cheers, Alan. Hi, everyone. Obviously, I've not probably met the majority of you, but I'm Eloise McGuinness. I lead on the Fibre to the Premise product within the OpenReach product team. As Alan said, both Simon Higgins and I have been invited on the call, essentially just to take you through some of OpenReach's thinking behind FTTP, so specifically what we're doing to transform the product and its associated service. And likewise, Simon will sort of talk then a bit about some of the current improvement initiatives in place that will help some of our existing order journeys. So for a bit of background, we've got a footprint of approximately, it's actually 350 total homes passed, as we call it. That's today with a commitment to grow up to and maybe beyond 2 million by 2020. That's split primarily between new sites and brownfields, as Alan indicated. Following some network build trials that we in OpenReach conducted earlier this year, and in line with what I believe, Alan, you've already shared with your customers already, OpenReach is building a new simplified FTTP network across the country. And we're using connectorized block technology, similar to like a sort of a plug and play sort of concept. That essentially is looking to sort of help speed up sort of our what we call lead cache process. So the idea is it's a more simplified and consistent order journey to kind of improve the experience that obviously end customers are having. So as of this month, our operating system stack within OpenReach has been enabled now to capture the new components that, like, associated to our new network, such as the connectorized blocks that I was talking about. And also it can help sort of identify that our, I suppose, operating system stack will also sort of help to identify the build types from plan and build through to lead to cash delivery. Strategically, however, you know, we know that's a, you know, that's sort of a good start, sort of going to sort of the steel threads, I suppose, to take us forward. But strategically, we also want obviously a new customer experience for FTTP. Aligning to GFAT, which you probably all already heard of. So we've got sort of one clear and uniformed ultra-fast portfolio. So to support this, we've started to look at the order journeys, end customer experience end-to-end. That's from our pre-ordering capabilities and messaging through to how we can assure sort of a consistent experience. And we're doing that, just to note, on our existing network. The journeys and experience on our new connectorized technology network going forward and then beyond. So what you can see on, well, I hope you can see on the slide, because I'm not on WebEx because I've had problems joining. FTTP transformation, it's titled.
Yep, got that.
Yeah, should still be on that one. Right, great. So the listed development news, the stories on the right-hand side of that particular slide essentially indicates OpenReach's view of what we think we need in place to enhance the customer experience. And these are what we're looking to target over the next year or so. So they're, you know, I must sort of hasten to add, they're not sort of committed stories as yet. It's just, again, this is just about us sort of being open and honest in terms of sharing our thinking with you. But we know that we need to tackle the most sort of irritating customer issues now, tactically, such as things which most of you should be familiar with, such as NAD key accuracies, ready for service reporting in terms of when we sort of commission our network, and things like minimum lead. In parallel, you know, there's a realm of strategic customer experience enhancements such as flexible appointing, speed alignment with GFAST, speed of delivery, etc., that again we're looking to start to introduce from 17.
Has left the conference.
And I'm working across all our CPs, including wholesale, to understand the customer needs. So just to take this sort of thinking one step further, can we just move on to the next slide, Alan?
So we're on the customer experience, future customer experience
slide. Okay, so there's a lot on this slide, but the idea behind it is to show that we see kind of the future customer experience on FTTP being closely aligned with the GFAST UltraFast portfolio and our values. So it's a similar sort of order journey. And the different themes we're focused on essentially is what's being reflected here. And it's about what we're doing to bolster the experience the end customer has. So starting from the left-hand side, collaboration, so briefly, is about us sharing like the right data at the right time, but all the time, whether that's how we share the ready-for-service locations for both new sites and brownfield builds, or how we can give a proactive assurance of the order journey and in-life service we're providing. Transformation is about mapping and enhancing the lead to cash and repair journeys. So, you know, for example, internally within OpenReach, you know, we need to ensure we've got the right flexible approach to build the service where and when we say we will. Choice, we need to make it easy for the customer, but we also know end customers are not just customers of ours. You know, they're also customers of Amazon, John Lewis or British Gas, etc. So we're aware of the wider experience, and we need to provide flexibility on things like appointing slots, because again, like all of us, you know, there's school runs or work commitments sort of we have, and so we need to ensure that there's a flexible appointment scheme. And we need to change or enhance the service, likewise, you guys can provide to your end customer. Handover, this is sort of, if I use the term premise passport, this is a term that we're using again on FTTP and on GFAST. And this is about, from our perspective within Openreach, it's about giving a richer experience to the end customer. And by that, I mean it's about sort of, you know, if we come into the home to install the ONT, you know, and do the internal installation that Alan had shown you on the previous pictures, you know, it's not just about installing the ONT. You know, we need to think about sort of optimising Wi-Fi in the home to get the, you know, the best, you know, the best level of service. You know, what the end customer wants, whether or not they want to move the actual ONT, or whether or not we can test and demo on possibly, you know, 6 computers, etc. And likewise, just to support that, the service signature is about, again, sort of giving that satisfaction. So not leaving the premise if the end customer is not happy. And sort of finally, but not lastly, enhanced support is basically ensuring we've got kind of proactive or preventative capabilities in place. So ensuring capacity is available, or our CPs are aware of the problem. So, you know, longer term, we are looking at concepts around repair as well, around, you know, can we introduce things like next day repair, and how do we direct fault issues more effectively, et cetera. So that's a sort of a bit of a whirlwind through sort of some of the thinking, but essentially, you know, we've mapped the customer experience order journeys by build type, what we call within Openreach sort of legacy in terms of where we've built the network today, new architecture, so the connectorized block kind of technology, and that's across new sites and brownfields. So we know that having mapped that customer experience order journey, we need to overlay them with the kind of improved customer experience requirements. And then we plan to share sort of more detail on this at our Openreach industry forums, which BT Wholesale attends, and likewise, I know that Alan's keen to kind of share that sort of thinking and output sort of going along. So, you know, as such, there's going to be a lot more information shared out on FTTP customer experience over the coming months. And, you know, BT Wholesale is fully engaged with our process. So likewise, I'm hoping then that you guys will sort of be engaged and be part of that.
Ellie, are you waiting for a Q&A session at the end of this, or do you want questions in midpoint?
So, I'm happy to have a sort of questions midpoint if you've got any.
Yeah, it's just a simple one, which you've actually said about within your clear handover, the passport side of things. I can see about the records issue causing troubles, etc. Recently, we've seen quite a few ONTs that have not been labelled up with ONT reference, so the customer's struggling to tell us what the ONT is for us to be able to enable another port. So I was hoping that could be included in there. It's not just a passport for the ISPs, yourself, etc., but also maybe a passport the customer receives to say, this is your serial number, this is your ONT, and should you wish further services, this is what the details you need to provide.
Right, okay. All right. I think Alan sort of mentioned that there's sort of issues that's been flagged up about that. And I know that I think it's been looked at separately, but certainly in terms of the longer term view, some kind of capability where there's some sort of serial number in terms of that quoting capability, yeah, I think that's worth looking into. So I can certainly take that on board.
Thank you, Ellie. It's Colin Harper here from Zen Internet. I've just got one further call question as well. It's about the FEA capability of the ONT. I understand some time ago there was an Ofcom issue that prevented them from being able to only have FEA, and they insisted on having a copper line for essential services like lift lines. Do you know if anything is actually on track to be able to relieve that situation with Ofcom, that we can actually have an FEA solution for a lift line or essential services?
I'll have to look into that. To be honest, I don't know the answer. the top of my head, but I can certainly go away and find out. So yeah, I suppose if I haven't got your sort of direct details, but I can kind of liaise via Alan if you want, or if you want to drop Alan your email address, you can forward it on to me.
I can give you it straight just now if you wish.
All right. Yeah, go on.
It's colin.harper
yeah.
at zeninternet.co.uk.
Okay.
As you're aware, we're a heavy user of it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Hi, it's Robert from Zen as well. There's a couple of items that I was hoping to kind of see on here, and I apologise if they're at some point in the future on the slide deck, but I was just wondering if I could run them by you. We're hoping to see something about maybe a migration product or something like that to move between suppliers other than the succession provider option that we have. Is there anything like that in the pipeline, or anything planned to make that a little bit smoother?
So migration between who, sorry?
Well, it'll be migrations between provider and also maybe network migration as well. I don't think anything exists like that at the moment. There is the succession provider, but obviously that is reliant on the customer actually doing something at the end to move ports on the router physically. But maybe something more in line with what happens with other connectivity products where it actually just switches over. Is there anything like that planned?
In the wholesale space, we don't have that at the moment. We, I think, had some capability like that until the notice of transfer.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So when that came in, it was decided explicitly to exclude FTTP from it, and that sort of did for our smooth migration capability. So it's not currently planned, but one of the points of these calls is to get feedback on what people want, so very much open for sort of comments.
Yeah, I guess the concern is obviously with the plans to increase the reach of it and also the number of users on the service, that's going to be something that we get asked for more and more, and if we don't have an option for that, it's going to make it very difficult for us.
Yep, certainly we'll give some thought to that.
Okay, thank great, thanks. And the other thing was around escalation paths for provisioning issues as well, because obviously, you know, we do have quite a lot of trouble with that at the moment. Is there anything in plan to make something more rigid or formal around escalation to give us an entry in when things unfortunately go wrong?
I don't know if Neil and Laura want to comment on that from a wholesale point of view. You there, are you on mute?
Hmm.
Sorry,
I'm talking on mute. the escalation processes exist at the moment, whereby you can come into our portal and raise an escalation, and we'll in turn take that away and escalate that within OpenReach. We also work to we escalate proactively with the OpenReach teams as part of our jeopardy management processes. So was there a particular point that you're having problems with the escalations, or?
I guess it's more, obviously sometimes it's very difficult to get traction when things do go wrong in the provisioning process, and I don't know at what point that's actually falling over. But with other products, we obviously have stage one, stage two, stage three, and so on, and that doesn't seem to be the same for fiber to the premises. And again, as we put more and more orders through, that is something that's going to cause quite a lot of pain if we don't have more structure around that.
Okay, let's take that. Let us take that away, and we will have a chat with OpenReach and work out how we can make sure that's in place.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so Eloise, we're back with you.
Okay. All right. So there's no more questions. So just on then, moving on to slide 4, if I've got it right, around about the high bandwidth.
Yep, got that.
Introduction. This is just briefly, but finally for me, before I suppose I'll hand over to my colleague Simon, who's also in OpenReach. We're introducing two new higher speed variants. 500 meg and 1 gig, that from the 7th of December. And these speeds will be available across our entire footprint and essentially support the interest we're seeing from our small to large businesses to get access to the higher bandwidths and ultra-fast speeds. So really all I wanted to say about this is that this is kind of an early, I suppose, indicative view of obviously when we're launching those feeds. In terms of sort of geographical locations, business locations we're targeting, we're rolling out essentially across things like high streets, business parks and science parks, and we've announced 7 city locations already, such as Avonmouth, Bradford, Bristol, Bath, and I'm just trying to remember Liverpool and some areas of Manchester and London. So what I just wanted to say here really was that, you know, anyone who's interested in discussing those plans and coverage details should obviously talk to Alan or Sean in wholesale. And I think, Alan, you've got some more information to talk about that anyway after sort of Simon's session. But yeah, feel free to kind of come feed your interest or queries in.
So it's just worth sort of saying on that, there is a slide later to sort of do it formally, but we, Openreach have obviously announced this, we haven't yet formulated the wholesale position on it, so we're considering it, but right now the 500 and the gig services won't become available on the wholesale broadband platform. It's for consideration, but we're very much open for feedback and views from customers about whether this is worth doing on broadband or not. Thanks, Eloise.
Okay, and then yeah, process improvements we've got in place today. If I can hand over to Simon.
Thank you, Eloise. Afternoon, everyone. So, as I say, my name's Simon. My predominant role as over the past, I suppose, 18 months has been how we improve the order journey for our customers across FTTP, both on our old networks, or what we term our legacy network, and our new networks, our scale FTTP network, and it's how we transition across, you know, those order journeys, which is absolutely critical. So I think, you know, for those who have consumed FTTP over the past 2-3 years, you know, great product when you have it, but I think there's been some question marks raised, some issues, which everyone, you know, who has been through that process is well aware of, about getting that order from A to B from the point of being placed until obviously that customer has that service. And I think there's numerous initiatives going on at the moment within Openreach for those customers who are placing order on an old network, making that much simpler and making it more transparent as well. So making it easier for our customers to see what's going on and to be able to manage their expectations all the way through to our scale architecture. So as you can see on the slide, I've split the three main categories, and I'll kick off with legacy. So this is the current architecture, which is based on a two-step provision process. So an engineer turning up for what we call a step one, and that is to do any external work that needs to be done for FTTP, and then an internal task, which is on the appointment date, service delivery engineer will show up and complete that customer. Now, one of the key elements for the provision process is the survey mark. This is actually done at point of build, and what this means in layman's terms is if we feel that there may be some additional work required to get you into service, we will mark your premises survey marker Y. If we feel that it will be a very simple provision process, we'll mark you as a survey marker N. And all that means is survey marker N orders will go straight out to infrastructure delivery and service delivery to the operational teams to complete that work. Anything marked with survey marker Y historically would go into the lead to cash planning team, and what that means is we will survey what additional work we need to do to get you into service as quickly as possible. Now, there are issues with that route, primarily around time and around, you know, visibility and proactivity of that process, and what's in place now to really improve that process for those customers we know it's going to be complex is what we call the KCI2 Assure process. And in a nutshell, the description is there at the bottom of the slide. In a nutshell, this is about once we've placed the order, getting an engineer out, an actual operational engineer rather than a surveyor, out to site within a few days of sale. That's arranged with the customer within Openreach, and the engineer will survey the whole route, identify what specifically needs to be done to get you into service. If he can do the work there and then, he will. So if it needs a bit of, if there's a sort of a blockage but needs just a bit of pushing through, he will do that work there and then and complete the step one, and that will then flow through to step two and the customer will be in service on time. However, if there are issues, he will survey all of the issues, make sure that's fed back into the teams.
if the customer is in, which we try to make sure they are, have that open and honest conversation with the customer to manage their expectations about what needs to be done. And then within a period of time, the KCI 2 Assure team, so this is an internal team with an open reach, will come back to that customer with an accurate date, which you'll be able to, we'll be able to provide you service based on ductwork that needs to be put in, poles that need to be put up, et cetera, et cetera. And that stark contrast to kind of the old process where customers promised a date 18 days from then, and it turned out that, you know, in 18 days we failed that appointment and it was going to be longer. So really, really good process for these complex orders. We manage that that contact up front. Now, some big improvements going on in this space at the moment as we speak. A lot of that is around really tightening up the customer contact, really tightening up, getting back to the customers as soon as we can. So not waiting 9, 10, 12, 15 days before we get back to them with a date, getting back to them as soon as possible. So again, it's about that in-life management and then the jeopardy management of that team, so the KCI 2 Assure team within Openreach, essentially jeopardy manage, proactively jeopardy manage all of these jobs throughout the process. So, you know, huge amount of work going in. The on-time delivery success rate of all orders going through the KCI 2 Assure process is around the 90-95% mark. And again, that's in stark contrast to where we were you know, about a year, year and a half ago, where anything survey Y marker had a delivery rate of about 60%. So a huge, huge improvement on that. And actually, we've seen a big reduction in the lead times, which again has been a result of the jeopardy management of that, of those orders that have been done proactively.
Now, that's a question there, Simon, before
yeah,
you
yeah,
sorry to interrupt just at that point. There's Colin Harper from Zen Internet Escalation lead on here. The one of the things you mentioned there is from the point of the order, you said a couple of days of surveyor will be issued out there. Is this going to be we currently have a surveyor demand issue just now, and it's taking weeks not only for a surveyor to get there, but also weeks for the results for a survey on Ethernet orders, as an example. Are you having ring-fence fibre to the prem surveyors that will be able to get out there quickly within a few days, a couple of days?
Yes. So the guys that are going out are not surveyors. The guys going out are infrastructure delivery engineers. So these are the guys that actually do the work if needs be. So it's the same guys who live and breathe the external work on a day-to-day basis. They are ring-fenced to FTTP. And these guys' jobs in for a KCI 2 Assure task is not to go out and do the step one. It's to go out and try and complete it if you can. But if not, feedback every single bit of information as to why that customer can't get into service. And then off the back of that, the internal, the desk-based KCI 2 Assure team with an open reach will do the work to identify exactly the time frame that it will need to take that to get that customer into service. So, for example, if it needs civils, if it needs traffic management, if it needs tree cutting, all of that sort of stuff calculated, and then an accurate appointment date will be provided to the customer rather than obviously, you know, giving them 14 days when we know we're not going to take it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense completely, Simon, and we actually have seen the new method working, and I've had the feedback from our product manager who's actually said they're seeing faster delivery time frames on the new delivery method already. It was just this bit about the surveyor I was a bit trembling about. The fact it's an infrastructure delivery engineer, far better news, so thank you, Simon.
No worries. I'll come on to that a little later on about sort of the requirement for that should decrease through retro build. But quickly, while we're still on the legacy order, so again, another issue that was raised actually earlier on this call is about whether this go down, for example, the end marker route. So this is when it goes straight out to the field and we commit a date to the customer. When things go wrong, which inevitably across an order journey is going to happen, we have numerous initiatives going on at the moment to bring orders back onto the handling path as quickly as possible. So we've got numerous jeopardy managers, again, desk-based jeopardy managers who are chasing these orders, chasing the owning groups to make sure that we are turning them around as quickly as possible for that customer. We have a weekly analysis which gets fed up right the way up to director and MD level around the cause of these failures and issues, with regular action plans put in place to reduce that number and improve the on-time delivery so you don't see those failures. And on top of that, we've got the regional owning groups within infrastructure delivery with an open reach who are actually taking full ownership of these orders. So a work stack sitting under them is their ownership. Previously, you know, 2-3 years ago in FTTP, it would be among 7 or 8 or 9 different owning groups, and there wasn't that end-to-end responsibility. We now have we're in a position where there is full end-to-end ownership within infrastructure delivery to jeopardy manage and push those orders through. Again, we're not perfect yet, but we're moving to a much more end-to-end managed world, which is really, really positive.
Simon, it's Colin again. Sorry to jump straight in at that point. This that was discussed about the effective escalation management, we're looking to find a smoother path to be able to get and discuss with the Jeopardy management team that may be handling these orders, to maybe have that direct interface with them, because sometimes our customers know the site better than the progress reports that we're getting back. So we're hoping for the future for a better escalation path through Jeopardy management, etc. So I hope that is on track as well.
Yeah, and within OpenReach there's lots of work going on that. One of the pieces I've been working on is bringing the customer service team within OpenReach, who handle a lot of the escalations as they come in, bringing them close together with a lot of the different owning groups within OpenReach, so the regional teams, the KCR2 Assure team, the lead cash planning team, who still do take orders when they come back off the unhappy path, bringing them close together. So those teams are actually working a lot closer now. So when, as you say, escalations do come in, we're a lot better at finding out exactly what needs to happen and who the right people to speak to. Again, we're not there yet, and there's lots going on to improve that. But as I say, it's better than where we were, but you're dead right. There's a lot of work going on to bring that closer.
I'll watch this space. Thank you.
Thanks indeed. So guys, we move on to scale. So this, when we say scale architecture, this is the new connectorized technology Eloise mentioned, the new plug-and-play technology, and the primary driver for moving toward this and the motif is build it once, build it right. So we are building the network much closer to the customer, meaning that when it comes to a lead to cash order, when it comes to the customer placing an order, it is a much, much simpler process. To give you an example, for the Hainerwick and Shepherd trials, we run the new scale architecture. We were operating of lead times at about average of 9 to 10 calendar days. And this is including, I think, I don't think we failed an appointment, we only failed one or two. And again, that's with all the teething problems you have with the new architecture. And even then, they were in service a day or two later. Feedback from the engineers, task times are a lot lower, so it's a lot simpler for the engineers to do the work. And the feedback from the customers, again, it's just that much less stressful experience because they only see one engineer turning up to site. Now, there will obviously still be jobs we mark down with a Y survey marker, inverted commas, with this technology. The principle behind that is if it's not in the state where we complete a one-stage provide within service delivery, it will mark up a survey Y, and in those instances, it will follow the case data assure process. That revised process of the scale architecture is currently being designed through numerous customer experience workshops we've been having over the past couple of weeks. And what that will look like essentially will be exactly the same, but again, making sure customer really aware at point of sale exactly what journey they're going to be going down and managing their expectations and experience all the way through and delivering on our promises. And that's going to be absolutely critical. And with that new technology, that should become much, much simpler as we move forward. Now, I suppose the gap that you may have picked up is we've got this old network, which we've mentioned is quite clunky. We've got this brand spanking new network. What are we looking to do to bring them closer together? And that's where the term retro build comes in, which you may have heard of. This is all about bringing our old existing legacy network and bringing it into a state that is much more in line with our scale architecture. So it is about going out and so we've gone out, and I think we're about 150,000 homes down of our of the 250,000 that we're going to be looked at, resurveying all of those properties, every single home, and any property where it's deemed that the survey marker is not accurate, every property where it's deemed that we're never going to be able to serve, so it's not adhered to policy, where the manifold or the demarcation point where OpenReach leave it at build is far too far away from the home. We are bringing those much closer to the customer. And what that means is, again, it will improve that customer experience for anyone placing an order. Even if they're placing on our old network, they will experience much shorter lead times, much improved on-time delivery. And again, once they get that product, it will be of that same quality as well. So loads and loads going on. And actually, as part of RetroBuild, we're actually putting in connectorized blocks where it is relevant as well. So we are adding this new technology to our old network to really uplift that customer experience as well. So loads and loads going on. I could rattle on for hours about the new technology and new initiatives that are coming in. But happy to take any questions on that. And sorry for waffling, gets me all excited.
Simon, it gets us excited that you're actually changing the process, because we've had grief over the last 2 years So seeing this new stuff coming in, seeing the ideas that are coming in, we're open to any conversations you wish to have, because this is good news for Zen. Excellent.
Any more questions for Simon?
Simon, a question from Paul at Internet. As part of that retro build, what would be the downtime if you're putting a connectorized block in as opposed to the existing fiber?
So if I'm honest, I'm not a technical expert in that arena, but it's been confirmed to me there will be no downtime. I can't explain to you the exact engineering reasons why there'll be no downtime, but I can confirm that there'll be no downtime, so you won't see any disruption in your internet as it's transitioned across.
Brilliant, good answer.
And Simon, this is Andrew Mercer from Business Broadband.
Hello.
What's the plans for fibre on demand? Originally it was always available only at exchanges equipped with FTTC. What's the plans for going forward on it?
If I'm honest, I'm not close to fibre on demand. Eloise, I don't know if you are able to provide any insight on FOD at all.
So we provide FOD. Fibre on demand is available. Alan, I'm sorry to be kind of passing over, but I think it's whether or not you're actually sort of actively consuming or selling it.
We are. I mean, I'm fairly close to fibre to frame on demand. As far as I understand it, the policy stays the same. It's pretty fundamental to the product that fibre to frame on demand. I've got a slide on it in a minute, so it might be worth if we sort of hold that until. I've got a couple of things to talk about on FTP on demand, and if I haven't answered your question, then if you want to come back, Andrew, that's going to work.
Okay. I mean, I'm sort of particularly interested as to what footprint is going to be. I mean, will there be any exchanges where both FTTC and FTTP are both available?
Sorry, it's Eloise here from Openreach. In short, there are different sort of technologies. So in essence, we're not looking to put P where D exists. But that's not if sort of with my honest hat on, that's not to sort of suggest that there may be instances where same postcodes are potentially being served. But that might be just a slight overlap. But from a deployment perspective, from an Openreach perspective, they'll be sort of separate. We'll be rolling out separately.
I mean, fibre on demand used to be only available at exchanges providing FTTC. But once I've got fibre on demand, I've now got FTTP. So there, it appears that C and P are both available.
So you're right that. Essentially, as Eloise has said, the policy is to build FTP or FTC, so they shouldn't overlap. But FTP on demand is available only to customers who are served by a cabinet which is FTTC enabled, and that's to cover customers who are served by the cabinet but are too far away from it, so they can't actually get FTTC. But coming back to your point. The customer who upgrades to FTTP on demand will then have FTTP available. They can buy succession orders, which would be normal FTTP. So in that situation and a few others, it is possible for an individual premises to have both FTTC and FTTP available, but it's very much an exception.
Right. And Alan, are we going to support an ADSL to FTTP order journey? Like Sagia, where we actually provide FTTP and cease the PSTN or anything like that? If I wanted to regrade from FTTC to FTTP, what would I do?
At the moment, it's you have to essentially manage it yourself. It's not offered as a seamless journey. And there's no immediate plan.
It wouldn't really make sense, though, would it? Why would you want to change from a product or an activation route that took you from a copper to fibre? They're two completely different technologies. So you don't need to have that that route. But, you can do it.
Right,
anyway.
But let's say I got FTTC as an exchange. There's fiber on demand available. My neighbour has bought fiber on demand, so FTTP is now being installed. I'm going to do a successive FTTP on their ONT. And so I want to convert from FTTC to FTTP to get the higher speed. The question is, how would I do that?
You would handle that surely within yourself. You wouldn't.
Has left the conference.
You do a succession provider and a cease of the FTTC, and you could do it the next day. You could have them up and running on FTTP.
Right. So you're saying you do it like the win-back scenario.
Yeah, we do that all the time. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, I take your point. Fair enough. Okay. Right, thank you.
Okay. Any more questions for Simon?
It's Dave Elam here, also from one of Andrew's colleagues. This just raised a thought in my mind. It's just an architectural thing about what's in the ground. For FTTP, does that way have to go via a cabinet before it goes to a customer's home or premises, or can it go direct from the exchange?
It will go direct from the exchange. So it doesn't bypass a cabinet. This is a brand new network that we're putting in the ground from the exchange.
But is it... Either it could go via a cabinet, I guess it can if it's hot again, but otherwise you always go direct to the customer's prem. So
yeah, the fiber prem, it will follow the same route as the copper generally, but it will be its own new network overlay on top. So it will bypass the cabinet essentially.
Mm. And even in the fiber to prem demand case, the network isn't tied to the cabinet, it's just an eligibility feature that you have to be served by the cabinet.
But so the low point. Don't you have a concentration point though out in the field at some sort of connection point, or are you saying that there are individual fibres going out to the premises?
No, so they will. It will be. They will have, I suppose. There is their own cabinet equivalent. So our splitter nodes, aggregation nodes along the network where the fibres are split out in the same way as and terminates on the connectorized block or the manifold, which operates the same as a copper DP. So it kind of mirrors the architecture in a way as copper, there is a cabinet equivalent, but obviously, so it isn't just one single fiber from the exchange straight to the customer. It does split out, but obviously it is its own network in a sense, rather than obviously using the cabinet at all.
Okay, but is that a shared network with FTTC as well up to the
So I think, as Eloise said, there's no in areas where we've already built FTTC. As things stand, we aren't doing FTTP and vice versa. So in a world where that would happen, then yes.
Yeah.
But at the moment, that's not in the plans to do.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Thanks.
Okay. So we move on for a minute. I've got a couple of things just to cover. To finish off. So business FTTP is something that we've spoken about, Eloise has mentioned, and we've spoken about previously in ISP forum and things like that. When we spoke about it before, business FTTP was sort of spearheading the higher data rates. And now, as you've heard, the higher data rates are to be available across the whole OpenReach network. And let's emphasize again that there's no...
Has left the conference.
The 500 and the gig rates on the wholesale broadband platform, so they're not available to wholesale customers at the moment. But it remains that OpenReach are targeting more business areas, and there's a list of them there. Eloise read them out earlier, and she got them all. So having started in Bradford and then gone to Avonmouth, so that's starting to build in those places you see listed there. And it uses scale FTTP. So there's very little about business FTTP that's particularly special anymore because all its clever features have been taken for the rest of the network as well. So business FTTP is a bit more business as usual than it used to be. And then to talk about FTTP on demand, a couple of things I just wanted to say on that. So I think as people should be aware, FTP on demand is quite a different product from FTP. It's technically identical, but commercially completely different. It has a 3-year minimum term. It has a very high connection charge, and its rental is much more. It's had a bit of a difficult time since it was launched. We took it off sale for a year while we worked with OpenReach to improve the processes.
Has left the conference.
The same way that has been done with some Ethernet and echoing some of the things that Simon spoke about. It's now up for, it's now on sale again, has been for several months. It's available essentially to customers.
Has left the conference.
Eloise McGuinness.
Has left the conference.
It's available to a wide range of people. One of the reasons for mentioning that is that there's a special offer on FTP on demand in areas where the customer can only get a low rate on FTTC. So if your FTTC rate is less than 10 megabits on FTC, you could be eligible if you're in range for fiber to prime on demand, which you can tell from the availability checker, then you could be in for a significant saving. This is only open to 10 orders across the whole country, but wholesale is participating in that, so it's worth a look if you're interested in FTP on demand a bit cheaper. There's a table on the slide describing part of the connection charge. In fact, the connection charge is £750 plus the price shown here, and you can see the offer price is taking the variable part of the connection charge down to a quarter of its normal value. So that's definitely worth doing if you're interested in selling fiber broadband to customers who get slow FTP, FTC. And I think pretty much to finish off, something about speeds, just to emphasize that, as I've said several times, the 500 gig services are being considered for addition to the wholesale platform, but no decision currently made. And we'd definitely be interested in views from customers about, do you think these rates are a worthwhile add to the platform or not of interest? So that's the new rates. And the old rates, some of you will have heard from Sean already, and some of you will shortly hear from him. We've identified that we have a few hundred lines still on some rates which are now redundant. They were withdrawn in 2013 and support ended in 2014, so we're quite keen to get lines moved off these rates. But Sean, if you've got lines on these rates, Sean will be in touch with a list of lines and request to move them.
Yeah, and we'll be in touch.
I think that is pretty much all I wanted to say. Any further questions for the people we've still got? Now's a good time to ask. Any questions on anything that's gone before?
Just checking if you can send the slides out. Would that be possible, please?
Yep, we'll do that.
Thanks.
Alan, this is a good session. Thank you very much. Colin Harper at Zen Internet. I really appreciate giving us the opportunity to interface not only with yourselves but also with BT OpenReach. Very useful session. Thank you.
That answers the last question I was going to ask about, does this work? So definitely interested. Thank you for that, and thanks for your interaction. Definitely interested in what people would like to hear about more, and whether we should do this again.
I think the next stage on this one, Alan, is actually to see the success rates, maybe in a call at the start of January to see, you know, how many are being served through the new technology as opposed to the legacy technology. You know, have BT OpenReach successfully migrated all those services? They've done 1,500 of them onto the new technology. I'd like to see if they've been done and dusted, that type of thing. So we've got sort of like a in-field report of where they are up to.
Yeah, good idea. So let's call for questions before we all close the call.
Yeah, this is Blair McGregor from Syscom. I've asked this question previously about the portfolio in general, but I'm just wondering if there's been any change on fiber voice access and BT Wholesale's intent to consume that as a product to provide to service providers, for example, through a SIP gateway.
No, there's no change at the moment. We don't offer, as I think you know, FBA through wholesale, and we don't, although we have other sort of voice products that you could use with it, we don't have anything tightly bundled. So no plans at the moment, but as in all, this is kind of open to discussion.
Just to pick up on that, Alan, it's Paul from Internet. I suspect you've heard from our customer who's got a PSTN line that can't be used for traditional voice and is fighting us bitterly about the transitional pricing at the moment. So we have got the ultimate edge case for voice over FTTP. It's causing much fun and games here.
I think I know the one you mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, happy to talk further if anything we can clear up on that.
So any rationale for that decision at present, other than the technical overhead to put a solution like that in place? It seems that the CPs that are consuming this at the wholesale level, there is a sort of market element where unless you go to the exchanges like some people on this call are directly, you can't compete like-to-like with some of the main retail channels. For example, especially in greenfield environments, the greenfield environments where there's literally no choice.
Yeah, the decision sort of precedes me in this job, but basically I think it was down to size of the market and size of the development. So it wasn't seen as being cost effective, is my understanding. But it's something we kind of keep under review. So
okay,
you're looking at the ability to provide sort of primary line voice to a greenfield.
Well, it's more of a fairness position, really. It's BT Retail seem to be able to sell this, but wholesale partners aren't able to, in effect, unless they build their own network out, which is just fair enough. It kind of undermines the purpose of wholesale in that capacity. But to have a fair and open market, it would seem reasonable that's a proposal that's extended out to other CPs.
Yeah, so I certainly understand the position it puts CPs in. So I'll look into some more and see what we can find.
Okay, thank you.
So any more questions before we...
Sam Parker-Bage
has left the conference.
Okay, well, if that's it, we can obviously take some more questions by email later, but thank you very much for your attendance and your attention. We'll
has left the conference. Has left to the conference.
Thanks a lot.
Has left to the conference. Has left to the conference. Has left to the conference.
Laura.
Has left to the conference.